Welcome back to The Life Hustle. I am Emma Romani, one half of The Life Hustle. Viv is in Dublin today, lucky duck, but she's back again next week with us. Now, why did we do this podcast if you're just joining us? Well, this series was put together because Viv and I were basically suffering from a little bit of social media fatigue, and we wanted to use social media for a little bit of social good to uplift and to inspire and to share some of the lovely conversations with people that we admire about their stories. Like, you know, you don't have to be well known. Like, we did find at the start that we were thinking, you know, let's contact celebrities we've worked with in Dublin. Let's go and interview them. And while it would be great to listen to them, and we've had some really well-known people who were so inspiring on the podcast, the one thing that's kind of come to us, the feedback that's come back over the last couple of weeks from the last few episodes, has really been that people have resonated and connected with the stories rather than who the people are. So a huge thank you for your feedback. It's been lovely. And I guess from most of the messages, it seems that resilience has kind of been the most spoken about unplanned theme across all of the episodes that you guys seem to really gravitate towards and like. I mean, we didn't set out for that to be the way, but it's really lovely, and it gives us a lovely boost as well to kind of hear that that's what you guys are taking from the stories that we're sharing. I was actually listening to one of Fern Cotton's podcasts recently, and she was calling out some comments and some feedback from her episodes. So I thought it was a lovely little idea, and I just wanted to give the first shout out to the gorgeous Eilish. She is a Corkonian living in New York for the last 12 years, and she sent some really kind words about the last episode about how Pam and Natasha's conversation really made her smile and gave her a nice bit of motivation and found it very inspiring. So thank you for listening. How sweet. So we also had a Cork lady who was saying that her son, 17, had left school and was not going to do the Leaving Cert and had started an apprenticeship, but that they'd never seen him so happy. And listening to the podcast episode Be in Fashion with Pam and Natasha had really cemented for her that allowing him find his own path was the right thing to do. So it's lovely to get that kind of feedback. You know, we've even had people online like Alexandra say that with the podcast, she's just trying to decide if it's a grab a cup of coffee type of listen or is it a pour myself a gin kind of listen. So we're all about the gin, girl. You go. Yeah. So thank you for all your feedback. I mean, we've even had people saying they're dressing the beds on a Monday morning, listening to the episodes, catching up with the different stories. So thank you for your feedback. If there's anyone in particular that you would like us to interview, or if you know somebody with a really amazing and inspiring story, please do let us know. We're right across social media as The Life Hustle. So this episode is called the Be You episode, and I am so delighted to have the beautiful Jean Noonan here with me in the studio. First time in Red FM.
First time in Red FM. Ooh,
ooh. First time on a podcast?
Yes, first time on a podcast.
Yeah. Podcast virgin.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love it.
It's exciting.
So, Jean, we know each other for many, many years, and I have always kind of gravitated towards, I guess, your approach to how you view maybe mindfulness, wellness. With you, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to be more of a way of living and a way of life than something that, you know, years and years ago we used. I remember when I first started work many moons ago, everyone was joined a gym, you know, everyone did classes every week, which is great. It's fabulous. But then I found when I had children, I didn't have the time or the resources. I wasn't working for a while, so I didn't have the money to have the gym membership. And I kind of fell into a slump of, oh, so at this point in my life, I basically am just going to get fat and feel bad about myself. And then I realized after not feeling so good in myself that, you know, wellness isn't actually something that depends on a bank balance. It's really, I guess you have to be accountable maybe for your own wellness. And I realized for me, it was just a nice cup of coffee in the morning, you know, in a quiet corner in the house, or reading a chapter of a book before I go to sleep instead of browsing the internet, or, you know, heading to the beach on a Sunday with the family. It was kind of something that, you know, that whole thing about happiness is an inside job. I do believe that.
Absolutely. And I think, like you said, if you're looking at your wellness approach being somewhere you have to go somewhere, pay someone money to give you something, then actually that's very external. Whereas really everyone has what they need within themselves. And as I know, of course, we always need guidance, we always need a teacher.
Yes.
But one of the things I love is that we are created from nature. We are part of nature, of the cycle of nature. And I think a lot of people forget this because we live in a world that's so removed from nature often, especially if you live in a city, if you don't get outside that often. But if our bodies were created from nature, and when we pass away, our bodies will go back into the earth, whether you're buried or cremated, whatever, not to get too morbid. So the more you can live your life in harmony with nature, the easier everything will be. Like you mentioned, going to the beach on
Sunday.
Oh my God,
I really have this massive draw. I live in the city, but we have a caravan by the sea in West Cork in the summer. And I actually think I'm a different person. My friend was explaining it to me, something about ions last year. You're a scientist, so you know the details behind that. But I feel more content and more calm and just more happy when I'm close to water. Is that weird?
Well, most of the time, if you're near the beach, it's you're quite close to nature, in the sense that there might not be sky-rise buildings and, you know, loads of cars or traffic and stuff. So the air is really pure.
Okay.
But from the ion point of view, the sea is literally salt water, and salt is crystals. And you might often hear about crystal healing or salt baths, or, you know, on a physical level, salt is really good for your muscles and to relax you. But on an energetic level, the ions, the salt ions, without getting too fluffy about it.
Okay.
Trap negative energy, or energy that isn't serving you, I like to say. I think negative sometimes is.
Maybe that's why I'm at the beach every Sunday rolling around.
Absolutely. And it's so healing. And the sound of the waves almost mimics the sound of our breath.
Wow.
And often, like, it's a very rhythmic motion. People often, we're primal animals, you know.
Okay.
So people would be instantly drawn back, whether they realize it or not, to being in the womb where they're safe, they're surrounded by water, there's this beat, this
how it
rhythm.
All begins.
Exactly. And like, again, the cycle of life, we're just going to go back and back, and it's where we feel safe. So to me, the sea, even if you can get there once a month, it's just
magnificent.
So healing. And get in the water. There's a group of us, actually, all yoga teachers. Everyone's welcome, but we try and go for a sunrise swim once a week.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes we dip in, scream and run back out. Other times we actually stay in, but it's phenomenal how good you feel. I know the Happy Pair do.
Yeah,
too.
I love watching
and
theirs.
I love that they say you can't be sad at the sunrise. There's so much hope and potential. And
well, for me, if I just get up at the sunrise and I present myself anywhere, I think I'm winning anyway.
Exactly. And I know it's hard because we live in a life where we're so stimulated that we're tired all the time.
Yeah.
And our bodies naturally wake up at the sunrise and go to sleep at the sunset. But in winter in Ireland,
my kids do that.
Yeah, you're going to bed at 4:30.
I force them to bed a bit earlier, and I wish they'd stay asleep a bit longer in the morning.
Again, that's going back to living with nature. The sun controls everything we do. It grows our food. It gives us melatonin, to survive. Again, if you can be in tune with the nature, it just, everything's easier. It's the same. You might sleep more in the winter and sleep less in the summer. We're hibernating, basically. You know, so many people say, I'm never tired till 1 a.m. in the summer. Because
that's
the sun is only just set maybe at 11.
You have so much more energy.
Exactly.
And more daylight hours
and
everything. So tell me about your own path. You didn't start out working in wellness. Like, I know so many people that I meet on a daily basis who, even if I'm walking through town working on my lunch break, I bump into people I know. The first thing they say, you know, when you ask someone, how are you? And you genuinely mean it. Unfortunately, a lot of people say, I'm exhausted. Maybe it's just our age group. I don't know what. But it's almost as if, you know, like if I ask somebody, how is work? They'll say, oh, fine. But, you know, I'm exhausted again. And, you know, like it has occurred to me that there are a lot of people not doing what they love or not living a life that they're content in. You don't have to, you know, obviously be jumping for joy every day. That's not natural either. But, you know, how do you get to a stage where, like, do we all follow a conventional path at the start after school? Or
Sometimes I think people don't believe they have options. And actually, this was a huge thing for me. I studied chemistry in UCC. And
now, did you go to UCC to study chemistry with an end goal of having a specific job?
No. And this is really interesting because someone said to me recently, why did you study chemistry? And it was the first time in probably, I graduated 12 or something. they said, you know, they asked a similar question, and I never once in my whole school time thought, I will do this to lead to this.
Okay.
Now, maybe that's because I wasn't present or aware or thinking about it. But I studied chemistry because I enjoyed chemistry in school.
So you actually, without knowing it, were living in the now.
Yeah,
and just doing something because you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I didn't realise at the time. And I knew there was something in the back of my mind, I think, that said to me, you know, I didn't want to do the corporate wearing a suit thing.
Okay.
And I don't, there's nothing wrong with
no,
that.
No, but that didn't appeal to you
didn't
personally.
Didn't appeal to me at all. And I loved science. I used to always ask why. I'd say I drove my mom insane.
You were one of those children. Why?
Yeah,
why?
Absolutely. And then when I was studying chemistry, I did for a while think I was going to become a teacher.
Okay.
And again, I think I've always been a teacher.
Okay.
My mom said I used to line my brother's friends up and tell them things, or I'd give them rules, you know, and say, you're not allowed. I know, you're not allowed to come in, you're not allowed to, you know. I used to love being in charge.
Okay.
And I think I've always loved explaining things to people because I get so much joy when I figure out how something works.
Right.
That I love passing that on. So to be brief about it, I suppose, I studied chemistry and then I knew I never wanted to work in pharmaceuticals.
Okay.
That's what I learned from having, and that's the majority of the work in chemistry
wow.
is in pharmaceuticals,
okay.
especially in Cork, especially in Ireland.
Okay.
We've some of the top 10 pharmas based here in Cork.
Okay.
So I'd done loads of travelling in university. I'd went away and worked away every summer. I'd been all over the world and I didn't want to take the whole gap year.
Did you go on your own or did you always go with friends? Or
for those trips, I did two were charity trips. So I went to India.
Okay.
And I went to Brazil. And
what was the draw? Like, how did you find yourself going on a charity trip in college?
I think it's always something we grew up with.
Okay.
We were real. My mom, people used to call her a saint. You know, she
okay.
would always help people out. Or we did grow up in this environment of
a giving
environment. Absolutely. Okay. And more so, you know, you can help others and you'll get so much more from it as well.
Okay.
Which is lovely. And then when I was in first year in UCC, someone handed me a flyer, I think, and said, do you want to work with children in a slum in India for the summer? And I was like, yes,
this
I
now
do.
Is while everyone's going off to the States.
Exactly.
50 people living in a house.
And thinking
on the piss.
Back now, I think I went home. I was just 19. I thought I was the oldest person in the world. I was super mature. And I said to my mom, I'm going to go live in a slum for 4 months in India. And
oh,
I think she was
your
like,
poor mom.
What? And this is before, I mean, the internet was there, but I used to have to go to an internet cafe to email her once a week to
wow.
tell her I was alive, you know?
Wow.
So this is before you could.
And no doubt she was living for that email
totally,
every week.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And then I did do the J1. I did that.
Okay.
And I worked in Lanzarote for a summer as well, actually did the sun holiday thing. So I think
you've
I
really
mix.
Spread your wings. So.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No
and
regrets.
I think to me, traveling is if you embrace traveling, if you try and explore the culture and you can decide whether you enjoy the culture or not. But I do find it funny how some people feel so safe in their bubble that even when they go abroad, they look for the Irish pub and they look for the Irish
I
people.
Know.
And there's lovely community in that. But equally,
yes.
are you missing out on all the amazing things?
No. And cultural experiences
Absolutely.
That are different to what we grew up with. Isn't that what kind of broadens your horizon a bit
exactly.
and gives you different experiences as
and
well?
And more understanding of people. And you just learn more about yourself, I think, and about us. And what you love, it's made me appreciate Cork so much more. Like,
okay.
I feel so at home in Cork now. I'm home 2 years.
Did you odd job, like in between your trips, did you, when you were travelling and when you were in college in Cork, coming back to college, were you working in the summers and that, or did you get a job after college?
Yeah, actually, I was only talking to my partner about this. I've been working since I was 13.
Wow.
And I think as much as I got the charity community side from my mum, I got the kind of entrepreneurial side from my dad.
So you had ethic. You know,
totally.
A good work
it's like
ethic.
If you want money, you work for it.
Brilliant.
And like, I remember I earned £1.57 an hour working in, it was L&N at the time, it's Quisha's Super Value now in Ballincollig. And I was a facer, so I used to have to pull all the stock out to the front so it had a nice flat face. That was my job every
wow.
day after school, and I used to get £20 a week.
Which was, you were rolling
I
in it
was
back
rolling,
then.
And like, I was 15. They had a license at the time, you could hire someone under 16 at the time. So
okay.
from 13 to 15, I worked there. And we'd go into town on the bus on a Saturday, we'd get to go to McDonald's or somewhere, and then I'd buy a top in Labella.
Oh, you were living it up, Labella.
To go to the disco that Saturday. And like, there you go.
Happy
and I learned then, okay, I don't mind working hard to get money to do the things I want to do. And it was
yeah.
never about money. It was to live the life I
that
wanted,
you wanted
to live.
To. Okay, lovely.
So I've done that. I've waitressed. I've, what else have I done? I worked in a pharmacy. I used to teach dancing.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I remember you teaching dance.
Yeah, I used to teach dance as well.
You studied actually, dance as well, didn't you?
Yeah, that leads me into it. So because I started saying this about 20 minutes ago, I'd say I finished college, knew I didn't want to work in pharmaceuticals, but didn't want to do the gap year.
Okay.
So I decided to do my diploma in dance in Stéphane Neefa. So it's a 1 year full-time course. And it was purely out of interest.
Okay.
I was 22, 23. And everyone else had just done the Leaving Cert, or maybe not even, and they were all trying to make it on the West End, Broadway.
Oh wow!
And
okay.
I was just there for the lols, which is brilliant.
Okay, that's brilliant.
Really good. And I learned so much about myself in that year, and it was so lovely to study something for the passion of it, without
yes.
actually ever thinking I need to make a career out of this, or you know. And it was very interesting going from having just written a dissertation on, you know, molecules
wow.
to go to
movement and
yeah,
dance.
Yeah, exactly. It was beautiful. And it's actually there that I discovered
it takes
yoga.
A huge leap of faith in yourself as well, though, to go and do something that maybe, like, were you at all conscious? Well, I suppose you came from such a supportive family and household, but I would imagine a lot of people, there's probably so many people listening that would love to do something like that and follow and study something they have a passion for, but they're maybe choose a path that's put kind of impressed on them, or with the end purpose of a job and money and
I think that's
material
actually
things.
Very hard, because sometimes people talk about success as the job they have,
a monetary thing,
yeah, and to me, or even a static thing, you
okay.
know, when I get promoted, I'll be happy. When I save enough for a house deposit, I'll be happy. When I get to here, I'll be happy.
You see, I even hear, and maybe this has come with age, but I just hear so much sadness in that, because it means that every breathing moment you're alive, you're not happy where you
exactly.
are right now,
and often
you're missing
the
now.
Nearly more, like I would say, nearly 99.99% of the time, when you get to this place you think that will make you happy, you're not happy, and you're only going to want to get somewhere else.
So we need to learn that it's the journey rather than the destination is what's important.
Yeah, and to me, as cheesy as it sounds, happiness is success, and you can tell when someone's truly happy. And like, being happy again isn't a static thing. You're never going to be happy all the time.
Yeah.
But it's
like
thing.
A contentment, like,
yeah, and there's a concept in yoga called santosha, and it means contentment, not contempt. Sorry, contentment. And it's being happy exactly where you are. And it's not easy. It's probably one of the hardest things you can do. But knowing that nothing is permanent, that the impermanence of life is the only constant, really.
Okay.
That when you're happy, unfortunately, you won't stay there. But equally, when you're sad, you're not going to stay there.
I like it.
To know that it's always changing.
Okay.
To ride the waves of life. I love that concept. And even, I know this is a podcast now, so you can't see my hands, but if you think of
they're
like
lovely.
A really sharp,
she's great,
they're beautiful. If you can think of a really sharp up and down peak,
yeah, okay.
that's often how people live their life. So, you know, if you imagine the heart rate monitor,
yes.
up, down, up, down, up, down. Most people go from severe highs to severe lows, severe highs. Even within a day, you know, it's like, I can't wait to go out tonight. Oh my God, I'm hungover tomorrow morning.
Okay.
You know, this kind of way. Whereas if you think of a much more kind of long, soft, waving motion, that's to me happiness, that the gaps between the highs and the lows are way less,
okay,
and that you can literally easily ride the waves of life. I
love
that. It's
that's
nice,
lovely
it?
Yeah. That's really nice, because we are in a society where everything is so fast and things are changing at breakneck speed, the internet's so fast, everyone's checking phones, and you know, it's all planning ahead and goal setting, and again it's all the future, like, and I just really feel that the now, I'm learning lately anyway, maybe my kids have made me do this, but they are the biggest masters in mindfulness I've ever come across.
Unbelievable.
They only care about me and now.
Exactly. And I think if you have kids, they are your biggest teacher. I say my dog is my biggest teacher. And like, I've studied with, you know, yoga masters in India, and you know, I've learned so much from them. I'm so grateful. But my dog every day reminds me, go outside, walk, move, breathe fresh air, talk to people, you know, sleep when you're tired, eat when you're hungry, rest, you know, enjoy life.
It's actually that simple.
Yeah.
It's not that big. It's not this huge,
and
you know.
And this, I think, is always something that's so easy to talk about, and so hard to do.
To do, of
course.
But
you have to prioritize it. So I think, kind of going back to me, I measure success in happiness.
Okay.
So where are you on your happiness levels? Are you, by and large, most of the time, happy? And I think it's not like giddiness
jumping around the place.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's feeling content within yourself, definitely, okay. I think.
So I was reading one of Oprah's books lately, and she said that one of the biggest things that gives her joy after all these years is still just going out on the lawn with her dogs.
Aww.
Leaving them run wild, yeah. Watching them, enjoying the sunset, and just being out in her own garden where she grows her own food. I'm sure she's a bit of help now.
Yes, yeah.
But that's her thing. Mm. It's just being out in nature, which is so nice. Anyway, back to you were traveling, and then
yes.
You did your dance for a year in Stefanica.
Yes, after my degree. And then during that time, unfortunately, my mom got really ill, and she had originally been diagnosed with breast cancer when she was 36.
So
which
young.
At the time I was 12, so she was ancient. You know, oh your gosh, mom is so old. And I never really thought about it. And I'm 34 now next week.
Okay.
And I realise how young she was.
She was so young. And with three of you, you've two siblings, Kate.
Yes, exactly,
and Ben.
Kate and Ben. And she was in remission for 12 years.
Wow.
And then it came back when she was 52, when I was doing...
Still so young.
Still so young. And like, I have lots of students now or friends who are well above that age who are living full, happy lives. Mm. So you really, you know, she was so, so young. But yeah, so she got really sick when I was doing the training. And to be fair, she continued, you know, encouraged me to keep going. And she passed away during that year.
When you were in Stefanica.
When I was in Stefanica. Okay. So we basically got kind of about 3 months from finding out that the cancer had come back to her passing away, which was really tough.
So fast.
And I really don't think I processed that at the time.
Okay.
And I don't think I was aware of these thoughts, but that made me more determined to do things that made me happy.
Okay.
As much as people called her a saint, she very much prioritized everyone else over herself. And I'm
okay.
sure as a mother, you can
yes.
totally relate because...
And do you feel guilty when you don't? So
oh,
it's, you're nearly conditioned into doing that.
Yeah. And I'm imagining that if you're feeling so guilty when you're not doing, when you're doing something for yourself, then sometimes it's probably easier just to, you can't enjoy that doing the thing for yourself. Sometimes a lot
yeah.
of people just say, I'll just.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, do the thing for the kids.
But isn't that amazing? I was listening to something recently where they were talking about how, you know, in the hardest, most heartbreaking situations of your life, if you can find one good thing that's come out of that, like how amazing that through all of that, it's like your mum gave you a gift of, it's like a foresight that you can like really look at your life in a different perspective.
Absolutely.
Almost.
Absolutely. And like she was very witty, and we know mm-hmm. like some people think this is really morbid and rude, but like myself and Kate and Ben would often joke that mom is like Jesus. She died for us, you know,
okay.
that like
Aww.
She died to make sure, and not just us, all the people
oh,
she had
wow.
an effect on,
okay.
That life is short. Don't
yes.
don't do the job you're not enjoying, you know.
Yeah. It's almost like she is your icon.
Yeah, exactly.
Really.
And I think from both live your life way, and also she was incredibly healthy. You know, we were like very progressive family on the street because we used to eat vegetables,
okay.
you know, like, you know, strange vegetables that people didn't know the names of yet. And, you know,
like
we,
avocados
yes,
and
exactly.
butternut squash
yeah.
and all these hipster
and
things.
And she loved food, and she loved good food. We always had home cooked food. I grew up basically standing on a chair next to the cooker.
Always
with
helping her.
And like, we didn't have money growing up, you know, sob story yeah. continues. I remember.
No, but
her.
Most families, you know, we all kind of, you know, we had what we needed.
Exactly. And
there
wasn't
abundance.
No, I've vivid memories of mom being like counting out the coins until payday. So it's
Me
like,
too.
We can get omelets maybe out of this
yeah.
or, you know. So I think.
They were resourceful.
Yeah, a resilient, like you were saying earlier. Like,
but look,
like,
look at the value she set in you all.
Totally.
Now.
And we all love cooking, all
oh,
three
wow.
of us, which is brilliant because to me, food you have at least 3 times a day. And I love saying this to students of mine as well. Like, if I told you there was a new petrol station opened and it had fuel that filled your car in 1 second, really quick and easy, it was half the price, would you go there and fuel
Flocking.
Your car? Absolutely. But now I'm going to tell you, you're only going to get halfway down the road and the engine's going to stop, or it's going to clog your engine, or it's not going to work as well. And everyone's like, that's stupid. Why would you do that? And then it's like you're doing the exact same thing with food. Here's something quick, easy, gives you loads of energy, a boost.
And nourishes you.
Then suddenly you know, if you're talking about processed
food. Oh, as in the bad stuff. Yeah, of course.
Exactly. So it's quick, it's easy, it's convenient, gives you a huge energy boost. But actually, in 20 minutes time, you're going to be exhausted reaching for another cup of coffee.
So it doesn't nourish you.
Yeah. And I know often food, especially with myself, when I'm really busy, it's the first thing to go because there's just no time for it sometimes. But if you look at food as fuel, as well as something you can enjoy, then, you know, we're coming back to nature. Every single bit of food you eat comes somewhere through the nature cycle. And you're just fueling your body either with something that's fresh and nourishing or something that's quick and easy that may not give you
the outcome, let's say. Okay. Like I find with food, I have done one of your retreats and the surprise part of the retreat that I enjoyed, actually one of the parts the most, I went for the yoga and the relaxation, but I came away with your gorgeous recipes, making my own. I didn't know how easy it was to make pesto. I know that sounds so lame, but I thoroughly enjoyed coming away after listening to fantastic conversations about food. They weren't like too heavy or you didn't have to be a foodie to enjoy it, but it all just, it broke some myths. It just really made it all very practical. And now, thanks to you, there's one major thing that I took home, and Timmy, my husband, is the exact same. Anytime we go shopping, he's like, what could we buy that's in season and local?
Amazing.
And that's from you. It's like,
I'm beaming here because it's like, sometimes you wonder, do people even hear what I'm saying? You know?
But I actually felt so silly. I was like, why have I been going to supermarkets as convenient as they are and buying oranges and apples or you know, local produce even? Now I even look, if I do go to Aldi to do some of my shop any week, I look at where the...
the origin of the food.
The origin, yeah. So, for example, strawberries, berries in particular, I tried to get something because you said so.
Yeah.
And I went away and read up about it afterwards and went, this is so, it just makes so much sense. Yeah. But I tried to buy something that has been produced in the EU even,
at least,
if it's not Irish. So the closer to home it is, the better.
Definitely. And I think as well, like on that point, we can get strawberries now at Christmas. Like strawberries are summer fruit.
And they don't taste the same.
They don't, because they've been like, you know, in, you know, made in a factory almost, where they pump in a particular type of air and they have different lights to mimic the sun, and you know, there's nothing. And I think on that point, just on the in season thing, like, I don't know, I remember as a kid, oh my god, it's blackberry season.
Yeah, we went out picking them.
No, it's blackberry season all the time.
I know.
You know, and there's no excitement about, you know, these chunks of food that come in
that, and nature gives us.
Exactly. And because nature gives them to us and we're made from nature, they're giving them to you for a reason at that time.
Okay.
There's something in our cycles that need those nourishments.
Okay. Very interesting.
And I just think,
and then
so
can I ask you, can I ask the scientist in you,
yes,
about food? Like if you are, say if I'm giving the children blueberries every day that come from Morocco or Chile, I'm giving them strawberries that came from Egypt. Like how much of those do they need to eat to get the goodness and the minerals and the vitamins from these foods? Are they getting any? I mean, if the miles are huge.
Yeah, it's hard to know because, you know, it's very hard to study those things because each person's body is different.
Okay.
And I think people often, you know, associate cravings with pregnant women.
Yeah.
But actually cravings are your body's way of saying
a deficiency.
I need this. Now, it's a big difference between sugar cravings because the more sugar you eat, the more you'll need. And the same with coffee.
I have a serious problem on the sugar front.
Yeah, it is.
You need to
hard.
Have a serious word with me about
well,
sugar.
Well, I always think with the sugar thing, try and have natural sugars. So medjool dates have changed my life. They're like caramel, but they're a fruit and there's nothing done to them. If you can get them organic, but...
Do you shop in the markets loads?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, again, very easy when I work for myself and I can set my own hours.
Okay.
That Thursday mornings are my market day.
Okay.
It took a while, but I tried to stop going to the supermarket and then do my weekly shop in the market, in the farmer's market.
Is there a big price difference?
It really depends. I predominantly eat vegetarian.
Okay.
So it is cheaper for me to buy, like, so I suppose my weekly shop might be less expensive than someone who eats a lot of meat.
Okay.
The meat in the market is expensive. But I will say an organic free-range chicken in the market is €18.50.
That's right.
So whatever about the cost, just have a think of what's happened.
Why is it that price?
To your €3 chicken from Tesco or somewhere else.
I know.
And whatever, if you, even if you'd like to disconnect from the ethics, what has the chicken been fed? What environment was it in? And what nutrients you're actually getting out of it? So I suppose myself and my partner, we might eat meat maybe once a month, maybe. And we don't set a date or anything, but it's just whenever we feel we need a bit more nourishment.
Okay.
We bought this €18.50 chicken. It was almost like Christmas Day. It was a big celebration. We had a beautiful
inviting
roast.
The neighbours
yeah.
in.
Yeah. We, I think we got about 5 days of food from that chicken.
Wow.
And then we made stock for the soup.
Gorgeous.
So it's kind of like a 3 year chicken or chicken breasts every week versus, you know, a piece of food that if you hopefully have the time, you can get so much more out of it. And from an ethical point of view, I suppose I would see that the animal's life wasn't in vain. It wasn't like we just want the chicken breast, let's throw the rest away, you know. And I won't get too much into that because that's a very personal thing, I think.
Another a podcast for another day. But
yes,
it's important for us to be aware of that. Like I have to say over the last few years, I just got very tired of every magazine I picked up was shunning some type of food
yeah.
or like literally everything I put into my mouth. I was thinking that there's no joy in this anymore. I can't even have just a glass of red wine. I'm worrying about sulfates.
Yeah.
If I have bread, you know, and
gluten
and everything. And then I kind of decided I'm in the English market a lot in town and I enjoy maybe it's an age thing and I'm a bit older and I have a business myself.
Yeah.
So I feel it's lovely talking to business owners and people love to talk about what
Absolutely.
They do. So asking them about their products and about the origin of the meat and
yeah.
the vegetables. But I go to is it O'Mahony's or O'Sullivan's? The chicken stall at the fountain.
Oh yeah, that's right. I would go sometimes
I
as well.
I love
yeah,
them there
they're
and they're so
yeah.
fantastic. And they have a sign. The reason I went there is because day one there was a sign at the back which is still there saying that they don't inject the animals with antibiotics.
Absolutely.
And it just made me stop and say, what? There's antibiotics in chicken?
Yeah.
And so that opened a whole kettle of thing for me.
If people really knew, I think, what went on in mass production.
Mm.
And again, I know this podcast another time, but you know, when people say you have to go vegan.
Yeah.
I'm a bit more about listening to your body, because if
okay.
again you're living in nature, your body will tell you what you need.
Okay.
And B, not every animal is treated the same in each country and each place.
Good point.
You know, and like yeah, it is it's a yeah, very complex issue.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I do think that the more you talk to people, the more you get to know about where your food comes from.
Just be more conscious
of information
it.
And you can make a conscious decision about
yes.
it.
Yes.
So,
good point.
You know, I think someone's saying avocados are good for you. That's again static language. They're good for some people, they're not good for others. They're good if you live in New Zealand and you can get them off a tree.
Yeah.
Maybe not so good in Ireland when they have to be shipped across.
And there's, you know, questions around the farming of them now and everything in certain parts of the world.
You know.
Oh, it's
but
just...
I just wanted to say, to go back
yeah.
to what you were saying about this whole shunning of food. People
yes.
love asking me, what do I eat? Because they want a formula.
As if there's one type
that
of diet.
That they can follow. Exactly.
Which
and
seems
I think
crazy.
In yoga and as a scientist, again, I think if you eat, like what I eat is so different to what you eat.
Yeah.
What I eat in the mornings will be different to what I eat in the evenings. What I eat in summer is different to how I eat in winter.
Okay.
You know, I think your body will tell you if you're fueling it well.
Okay, yeah.
Your skin will be good.
You can't hide
your
it.
Your hair will be good. Your nails will feel
energy.
Nourished. You'll have energy. You'll have balanced energy. It goes back to these peaks and troughs or the wave again.
Okay.
It's like if you're exhausted and then, you know, full of energy, exhausted, full of energy, as opposed to having a lovely, consistent energy level.
Okay.
And I think when people, and I've done it myself, I've been paleo.
Okay.
Which is pretty much just meat and
okay.
veggies. I've done vegan. They were all ways I used to control.
Okay.
I am a control freak.
Okay.
And
I think
they were
an
always back when I wasn't aware of controlling things. That
okay.
if I can control this, I'll be happy. If I can control this, I'll be happy. And I've never been so happy just throwing that out
Being
the window.
Being yourself.
Having a coffee.
Using your own intuition.
Yeah,
kind
exactly.
of thing. Okay.
You know, having cake if you want cake.
Yeah.
But, you know, green smoothie if you feel you need a green smoothie, you know.
Because I 2 years ago, I working in the fashion industry for years, people have this perception that you know, a lot of models, for example, don't eat, and there's all these stereotypes. In Cork anyway, they couldn't be further from the truth, because our models are always the first to the buffet bar, first for the free everything. And I just got really tired of, like, I kind of felt, okay, well, if I'm going to buy the magazine cover that has the cover story about someone's bikini body, then I'm nearly fueling that industry or that ideal, and I don't believe in it. So I'm obviously reading the wrong things, because if it was bringing me down looking at things on the internet and reading these magazines where women's bodies are being torn apart. And I felt during my 20s, I did try different things, like, you know, and different diets and went to different gyms. And while there were benefits to it, it wasn't sustainable long term for me. And then when I became a mum and wasn't able to get out of the house, I was like, oh, right, so, you know, what happens now? Do I just get fat? Yeah. And, you know, so then I was like, maybe there's another way. And from going to your retreat and even following you online and your community and just talking to people, to other like-minded people, I have a new kind of love for food again. Great. And you know what? Some of it's old-fashioned food, simple, plain food. I love to have a glass of red wine, you know.
I love red wine.
And, you know, and sometimes I really don't want one. It's, you know, you just listen to your body. And the one thing I love doing is, you know, going to the kitchen, you know, when all the bread fiasco was happening during the snow last year. Like, we just had porridge in the house and we just got the tub of Greek yogurt.
The yogurt bread.
And we made bread with a bag of porridge. So it's lovely to find things in your house and just make them from scratch. And they're not that hard to do. Like, I love, with the kids, I used to, you know, go to the supermarket and get biscuits or get treats. Now I can whip up the quickest cookies with oats, a bit of syrup or honey, and throw in, like you said, dates or cranberries, or, you know, it's really easy to make your own
at
home.
And you're teaching them as well, I think, which is really important. Yeah. I think the mindset around food is that it can be an inconvenience.
Yes. Whereas you don't have time.
You don't have time. Whereas I thankfully love it. My partner loves it. It's our way of spending time together. And we drink a glass of red wine while we're doing it.
That's,
you know,
lovely.
And I think, again, I lived in Germany, as I said, he lived in Switzerland for a good chunk of time. And then we came home and it was really evident to us, again, to generalize, the not very healthy attitude people have to alcohol. I've opened the bottle, we must finish it.
I know.
And like a bottle,
I've done
of
that
wine.
Myself.
Oh yeah, I have two.
But I know drinking it, it's not going to make me feel good tomorrow. And again, having the kids, maybe I now feel no, because I can't be mom on the couch going, oh, just to watch Peppa and be quiet there.
That's okay too. If you
ringing
need to do
social
it.
Services on myself.
The mom guilt. But I do think, like, as soon as you tell yourself you can't have something, it's all you want. And to loop back actually to us as kids, we were never allowed sticky sweets. We were never allowed crisps, never allowed fizzy drinks. No. I have vivid memories of going to my friend's house and they had cans of Coke in the same press as, like, the giant bag, the sharing bag of potatoes, or sorry, the multi-pack of potatoes. If I went there, if the mom offered me, I would drink 5 cans of Coke and about 10 bags of potatoes, because I
would
knew
OD.
I wouldn't get them again. Exactly. And it's all I would think about. I'd go to their house and I'd be like, oh, when is she going to offer
it's
me
It's like
can
forbidden maybe? Fruit, like,
like,
you know, off
drugs.
You go.
It's like, oh, I need to get the Coke. So I think as soon as you deny yourself something, whereas if you approach it from the attitude of, this makes me feel really bad, I'm choosing not to have it, as opposed to I'm denying myself.
Yes.
I think it's a very different mindset.
Great point.
Yeah.
I feel like 2 years ago I went, was it 2 years ago? Yeah, after I'd quit anyway, I had been reading up loads online about, you know, the planet side of being a vegetarian, the health benefits of it. So I kind of just went, oh yeah, sure, I'll give that a go. Isn't that great for the environment now? And I'll be glowing.
Yeah.
And about 6 weeks in, I was nearly hospitalised because I stupidly just went, oh sure, you know, this is the thing now, we should all be doing this. Didn't realise that my B12 stores weren't great and still, you know, I wasn't long after having a baby, so my body hadn't started to heal yet.
Yeah.
But I got very sick, and in reintroducing small amounts of meat, as you said, when I need it.
Yeah.
I don't eat a huge amount of it. I do love fish, but I might have meat once a week if I'm cooking it with the kids, or, you know, a week could go by where I don't. But then if I get lethargic or I get very tired, I kind of know that I just need a nice piece of meat, you know, but like that I'll go to the market and I'll really go to talk to the butcher and, get a really nice piece. Like, so I just think, as you said, is it people's, you know, is it what we're being conditioned to kind of do and what we've done for so many years, and that we're afraid to look at it from a different angle?
Yeah, because you know, if you look at it, you'll have to change, and people are afraid of change.
Yeah, good point.
And I think, like, to go back to what you were saying about loving going to the market, like on my retreats, I can tell you the name of every supplier of every, bar a few things like rice and stuff.
Okay.
That, you know, you have to import, and nuts and stuff. But even for those, I can tell you the name of the person who brought them in unpackaged into Ireland, you know.
Wow, okay.
And like, there's a beautiful human connection with food. And to go back to what you were saying about chatting to people over food on the retreat, to me, food is so important. Like, all connections, all sharing is done over food. And I noticed this in my job. People are very slow to say hello to the person next to them on the yoga mat.
Okay.
The minute you put a cup of tea in their hand and give them a bit of cake or something,
comfort,
the chats that start to happen. And to me, they're all tying into each other, because, you know, they might be there for the yoga, but the food is nourishing them, and the food builds community, and it all loops back. And
that's lovely.
It's beautiful, actually.
It's like a thread that connects every one of us.
Exactly.
That's
and
lovely.
If you think back, all back in history even, or your own history, all big events usually are centered around food.
Yeah, that's so
let's
true.
Let's go for a meal for someone's birthday. And you're celebrating. Celebrating, exactly.
Aww.
And I think now we're all quick to eat standing up or on the couch. And actually, even if it's lighting a candle, like the whole, I don't know if you heard of hygge.
Hygge, is it? Is that it?
Hygge, I think hygge. Is how you pronounce hygge. It. Yeah. And it's the idea, it's this Danish concept of, you know, comfort and having stuff in and around your house that are comfort. So candles are a huge thing. And it's amazing what happens when you light a candle at the table. It's almost like a ceremony. Even if you're eating off plastic plates, you know, or having a takeaway pizza, light the candle, and it's amazing. People want to stay around the table more.
Okay.
It's almost a ceremony. Yeah, I think it's lovely.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
On a Sunday, we've started doing, like, the most important thing for me is just to grab 10 minutes in the day where everyone sits down at the table
lovely.
Together.
I think that's really nice.
Because for so many years, you know, even before the kids came, we always went out for dinner and we weren't really, you know, I wasn't really a sit down around the table kind of person. But then when I had the kids, you know, I realized I want to hear about their day and I want to just see how things are and the stuff they come out with. It's so fun.
Lovely.
But it's, again, it's through food. So we do that. And then on a Sunday, we do like a special breakfast where Erin gets to try and help out making everything.
Lovely.
But it's now become what I look forward to every weekend, because I can see them, you know, when you were talking about happiness and contentment, I can see them so happy. And I know that in the next couple of years, they'll be like, do I have to do this, Mom?
But
so I'm taking advantage.
You can change then. And I think when you come back to everyone being so busy, let your activity be them helping you cook.
Lovely.
And they will take so much pride in, like, my nephew's just 2 and I got him to help me load the dishwasher today because I needed to distract him while I was
trying to do something. They love helping.
And you have to trust them to some, you know, maybe don't give them your best wine glasses, you know, in case they
Or your
them.
Swiss Army knives.
Exactly. Sharp things, knives, maybe not. But they love helping. And I think the more emphasis and joy you place on it, the more they'll want to sit at the table.
Lovely.
And they'll want to be there with you. And I love, actually, I went to a restaurant, Tally, last night. I don't know
if you've been there.
No, but
I only discovered it because you tagged it.
Yeah,
and
we stumbled across
it. Looked mouthwatering.
So I'd say if you add up all my trips to India, I've probably lived in India for nearly a year and a half over the time. Now, this is Nepalese, which is very different. And I know, you know, I'm not saying they're the same, but I've lived and eaten similar type food and it's some of the best food I've had. But there was a huge table of family. Maybe they were Nepalese. I'm not sure where they were from, but this was 8:30 at night and all the kids were there. There was probably 3 generations and they were all just sitting around
sharing.
And you probably say, oh, I should have got the kids to bed at bedtime. But it's like the kids are learning that you connect and you eat good food. And, you know, it was beautiful just to see them all together.
And that's, again, is that not the most perfect example of mindfulness? They're
totally
all together in the
present.
Now, in the present. On a trip to Rome a couple of years ago, it was the same. Like they don't have a massive drinking culture, well, not that I saw anyway. And every restaurant we went to, it was families and 3 generations around one table for hours. Like nobody was in a rush anywhere. They were just savouring the time as well as the food.
And you all, like, I think we used to live multi-generational. Like, yes, there used to be at least three generations in every house.
True.
Back in the day in Ireland. And now it's like everyone's a bit more removed from people. And I think the older people will teach the younger people. The younger people will teach the older people.
Absolutely.
You know, if we just stay in our own age group.
And you know, in some of the countries in the world where people have the longest life expectancy, that's the two things that are kind of that they believe are the basis of that are, one is that people have purpose, that
yes,
they grow their own vegetables, and that there is 80-year-olds going out and tending to their little patch,
yeah,
and they swap vegetables with the neighbours.
Oh,
so they have purpose. And the second is that they live multi-generational, so there are, you know, that they value elders, and
yes,
that they
the respect,
believe that they give their grandchildren and great-grandchildren lessons in resilience, in, you know, different, because they have the wisdom, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
And that everyone benefits from each other in different ways.
It's lovely.
We don't have that at all.
No.
Really, we're very insular, aren't,
yeah,
we? And we're kind of like little robots just getting on with it. So tell me the yoga side of things. I took up yoga when I was in my early 20s. I had a really enjoyable but high demanding, stressful job, and I just wasn't feeling myself. I was really out of balance, and my mum brought me to a yoga class with her, and I just thought, ah, come on, like, we're just stretching and
waste of time.
I thought it was the biggest. I was like, I should really be joining a gym and doing,
yeah,
this and that. And after about 6 weeks, it all came together. And I can't put words to it. But from then, I was sold.
Okay.
And I just always, if I ever feel bad, I'll just pull out my mat at home. We do Cosmic Kids myself.
Oh, it's
and
brilliant,
it's, she's
it?
So lovely, Jamie.
Oh, yeah.
And we do that most nights during the week, actually. And
it's
now
lovely.
Quinn, who's nearly two, starts doing it as
I
well.
Guess.
And he'll like sit on my lap when I'm doing different,
yeah,
things. And it's just like kind of a way and a thing that we do at home. But anytime I felt unwell, yoga was the thing I went to, that I kind of put time aside to do for myself, because I knew it would make me feel better. But now it's become a little like I'm not a yogi, or I'm not joined any, I just don't have time to go anywhere with the kids, but I will take out my mat and I will do it on my own. I'll do, because I can't get to the gym, so
yeah,
I do a little body coach, 15
lovely
minute workout
too,
with Joe, and he's sure he's lovely,
yeah,
to look at. Anyway,
exactly.
So look, that's a bit of mindfulness.
He's actually good, I think, what he does.
He's really good.
15
and
minutes
I'm sore after
nothing.
It the next,
yeah,
day.
Definitely.
So I do that, and then I'll always put aside, even if it's only 20 minutes of yoga or if it's an hour of yoga, I always walk out of the room or come off the mat feeling different.
Amazing.
It's the only thing that I do that I don't need to. It doesn't matter if I don't have my gym gear on, if I can't get somewhere,
yeah,
you know, if I can find a window, it's the thing I can do for myself.
Well, I think there's two lovely things that I'd love to touch on. There's some people who'd call themselves yogis.
Okay.
I feel like you, just what you said, is more yoga than a lot of people. So I would often say to my students anyway, you're better off doing 15 minutes every day than getting to one 90 minute class a week.
Okay.
Because every day you're topping up your battery, basically.
Oh, lovely.
Is what you're doing. And then the other thing, which is really interesting, is the 6 week thing. I think sometimes people say, oh, you're just trying to get us to sign up for 6 weeks financially.
Okay.
Like, there's something about that 6 week mark where everything
I can't put words
place
on it.
Yeah.
Now, at the time, God, this is like so long ago, but I was suffering from kind of panic attacks, and, you know, I was in my really the start of my 20s, and I was trying to achieve and, you know, and working so hard, and there was just so many pressures, and yoga just put a pause button on everything for me.
Yeah,
and it made me just stop worrying about stuff and be with myself in the now. And
yeah,
I think it was like a light bulb moment for me.
Mm.
So I think I subconsciously, if anything kind of sets me off balance, I put myself back there without kind of realizing I do.
Lovely.
That. I'm like, I need to do this.
Yeah.
Everyone leave me alone.
Yeah, your time. And like, I would, my students, I'm sure, are sick of me saying this now, but it, like, it's such a simple phrase and has so much meaning. Yoga isn't a workout, it's a work in. And
I love that. Yoga isn't a
workout,
it's a work
in. And I think it can be a workout. And like you said, you know, you might be sore after some postures and things like that. But I think what yoga, what a lot of people would consider yoga, is actually one small, very small fragment of what yoga actually is. And it's so much more than that.
Mm.
And I had a laugh recently with Juliette. She's owner of Flex in the City, a Pilates studio, if you know.
Okay, yeah.
The amount of people who say to both of us, oh, you're a Pilates teacher, I do yoga. Or, oh, you're a yoga teacher, I do Pilates. And because Pilates did come from yoga and there's certain elements, they are so vastly different.
Is like, Pilates more exercise, like core?
Yeah. So Joseph Pilates was I think he was German. I'm sure a Pilates teacher and I would know a lot more about this.
Okay.
But he had a injury, I think, and he took elements of yoga and mixed them with other movement forms to focus on strengthening the core and connecting to the breath. Whereas there are two elements of probably eight parts of what yoga is. So there's, I would say, more that you can't see in yoga than there is to Pilates. But I go to Pilates myself. I love it. I'm not dissing Pilates.
Right.
But I think yoga is an ancient philosophy. It's between 3 and 6,000 years old.
Wow.
They found written evidence and then they found physical evidence. So historians are always kind of arguing specifically about when it started.
And you've tailored in, not tailored, but you've fused your yoga with, like, have yoga and your Hope Foundation trips kind of married in a way or crossed paths?
Yeah, so another thing I'd be heavily involved in is the Yoga for Hope project, and the Hope Foundation are a group here in Cork. Well, they're based in Cork.
They do phenomenal work.
Amazing work. And Maureen Forrest is the lady who set up. She's just
an amazing lady.
Inspirational.
Yes.
And they basically, we have a trip that we do every year where if you have an interest in yoga, you don't have to be a yoga teacher, you don't have to ever got on a mat. If you just have an open mind and you want to learn more, you can come. And what we do is we travel out to Kolkata, which is Calcutta.
Okay.
They're changing all their names back to their pre-colonial names, which is lovely. It'd be like us going back to Osgoelga.
Okay.
So Kolkata it's called now. And we go there, the Hope Foundation have about 60 projects there, from residential homes for street kids to education centres, hospitals. Like, it's such a holistic project.
Would you say your
that's
first
another podcast in itself?
I know,
well, I'd say,
I can imagine. Like, would, do you need to be, I suppose, you know, if the time is right to do something like that in your life?
Yes.
For you, when you first arrived there off the plane on your very first trip, was it a bit of an eye opener? Did it change you?
Yes, I think India to me is like Marmite. I've never met anyone who was indifferent about India or didn't have something to say about it. You love it or you hate it.
Okay.
And there's no in between. I've never met anyone who was like, oh, it was grand, you know.
Okay, yeah.
You fall in love with the place and the people, or you absolutely can't stand it. And
okay.
I think that's okay too.
Yeah.
But there's something about the spirit of the Indian people is just, I can't put it into words. And with the Yoga for Hope trip, why I love it so much is the primary purpose of the trip is fundraising, because
yes,
they can't do what they do out there without money.
Of course.
But you get so much from the trip. And I love that about charity, that if both parties can benefit.
Yes.
Like, it's great to say I'm going to do all these things to torture myself to raise money.
Yes.
Fine, but, you know, hopefully you'll get as much out of it as possible. And I don't think anyone's ever done that trip and not come home changed.
Mm.
What we do is we focus a lot on doing our own yoga practice in the morning.
Okay.
Go out and visit the projects and do stuff with the kids. And then do a debrief and meditation and relaxation in the evening. And there's lots of different groups that go out on the trip.
Okay.
But even some of the organisers this year, one of them, Gora, the guy who makes sure we all get to where we need to go, he's like, the yogis, he's like, they're always so calm. And the children respond, because when we go in with a calmness and a peacefulness and also with a heart focused place, the kids gravitate towards it. Kids are really perceptive to energy.
Okay.
And you can tell, whereas it's not easy. Like, you go and visit some very shocking situations. And
the one thing though that has always struck me about your pictures from your trips that you have shared is that the children that, in, you know, comparison to our society, have nothing.
Yes.
They're so happy, like, and content.
Resilience
and
is the word there again. Like, the last trip, it really struck me. There was kids playing. One was playing with a bottle top and he had ripped the sides to make it into a boat.
Okay, wow.
And there was another kid, you know, we have to be very careful of our health over there because there's bacteria there that we've never been exposed to.
Okay.
You know, and they're living in it. They're
immune.
Yeah, they're immune. Okay. So we would often have hand sanitizers and wipes and stuff. And one of the girls, I think one of the wipes had fallen out of her pocket, and 10 minutes we looked over and there was a kid, he'd made a boat, and you know, then he turned it into an airplane, and like he was playing with a tissue basically.
And it's their imagination. Children will be children.
Yeah, and they just want, like, they, people often say to me, how do I come home and leave them there?
I know.
They are fine. And obviously the Hope Foundation are looking after them, which is fantastic. But yes, like, I often come home actually feeling more worried about Irish children than I do about
Indian. That's so interesting.
Because their resilience and their determination to live is phenomenal. And I think that's another bit to go back to the spirit of the Indian people. And maybe this is why I'm so drawn to yoga. Yoga originated in India.
Okay.
But they have such a sense of purpose.
Okay.
And it's, the caste system, unfortunately, is still alive and well in India, even though they say it's not. But there's something about being born into a particular type of situation and knowing that that's where you're supposed to be.
Okay.
And that, I think sometimes when we have too much choice, we get overwhelmed.
Yes.
You can be anything you want to be, but no one actually really asks you, but what do you want to be? And I think sometimes they're like, I am going to be the best rag picker there ever was.
Okay.
I am going to be the best doctor there ever was. You know,
yes,
whichever situation they're put in, they really believe that that's their purpose. It's
okay,
a concept called dharma.
Okay.
And that if you're living your dharma, you're on your path. And there's literally, you be the best of that as you can be.
Okay.
And there's a lovely phrase, it's better to do one's own dharma, even though imperfectly, than to do another person's dharma perfectly.
That's,
and
so
I love
special.
That. And I think with dharma's a funny one. It's often not usually a career.
Okay.
So I did a dharma training once, and one of the ladies on it realized in her 60s, her dharma was growing tomatoes. It was where she was happiest. Like you were saying with Oprah, she's out in the earth. No, she was a lawyer. It doesn't mean she was going to leave her job as a lawyer.
Yeah.
She just knew that she didn't have to constantly become a better lawyer, because actually her purpose, her reason for being on the earth was to grow
something
tomatoes.
Something else. Oh, wow.
You know?
Wow.
And someone asked me recently, it's my birthday on Tuesday, and Tuesday's my busiest next two Tuesdays.
Okay.
It's my busiest day teaching wise.
Okay.
And someone was like, are you going to do something nice for your birthday? And I was like, actually, I'm going to be working for most of the day. And then I was like, in India and in yogic philosophy, you never get anything on your birthday, you give.
Okay.
And the idea is you're celebrating the day you were born into this physical body because you have a purpose on earth to do something.
Which is what you're doing.
Which is what I'm doing. Thankfully,
wow,
I've finally figured it out. And I'm sure it'll change. It'll evolve.
Yes.
But I feel like my purpose, my dharma is to serve through teaching. And so in India, on your birthday, you serve other people cake.
That's lovely.
You get to eat some at the end.
Uh-huh.
But it's like here, I am celebrating my purpose. And I
and
just
you're
love
connecting
that
with people doing that.
Exactly.
As well.
So I'll
That's
be
lovely
teaching, and I'm very happy to do it because I love it, you know.
It's amazing. How did you start the business? So did you oh, never really set out, like Viv and I, we never set out to open up our business.
Yeah.
It just happened naturally.
And I think often, I mean, business plans are brilliant if you're, you know, looking for funding.
You need a big loan,
you need
premises.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was talking to, I don't know, do you know Simone from Rocket Man?
Yes.
So she was the same. Never had a business plan. They never have, you know. And to me, I just knew this is what I had to do. And again, there's a bit of a disconnect between money and yoga. I feel some people think you're either big corporate business, money, money, money.
Okay.
Or you're a poor, lonely yoga teacher.
Okay.
You know? And I hopefully think I found somewhere in between where
okay,
I feel like I'm giving an authentic, heart-focused, beautiful service
okay,
in exchange for a reasonable amount of money. And
lovely.
I had a chat with a friend recently. She was like, Jean, what makes me happy or what sparks joy? I don't know if you've seen Marie Kondo.
Yes.
On the
so she was the like, tidy up
yeah
thing. Yeah.
She was like, what sparks joy in me is cashmere jumpers and Prosecco. And she was like, mm-hmm, I can't live that lifestyle if I give free yoga classes. So she said, if I'm happy, I give a better yoga class. So
okay,
I think that's a nice attitude to have.
Lovely.
If you're ripping people off and not giving a good service.
Yes.
Okay. There's a bit of a disconnect there. But to me, I feel like I'm giving a reasonable service in exchange for money that allows me to live. And I mean, yoga training is expensive and you're never done. I feel like I'm never done. I'm always learning, always experiencing more. So yeah, never had a business plan, just knew this is what I was supposed to do. And it can be so lonely. Like I've sat in village halls on my own, knowing I was paying 50 euro for the hall.
Okay.
And I was down 50 euros, down my time, I was down the equipment. And it's hard. It's hard. And I think a lot of people think, oh God, yoga teachers
are
all
swanning
rich.
Around, looking amazing.
And that we go for brunch all the time, which we do actually. Because I said this to someone recently, I'm going for brunch on a Tuesday, but I'm working till 10 o'clock at night. You're at home on the couch
by
at 5
o'clock
or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
So our brunch is your dinner on a, you know, you're going out for dinner. But I mean, it is.
But isn't it lovely that you have fallen into a path through what you adore doing? And now it's become something that can fund your existence
Absolutely.
And pay your bills and allow you to live.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
And to me, I'm happy. Someone asked me the other day, what would be your like ideal level of wealth?
Yeah.
And I said, my ideal level would be if I saw a dog who needed rehoming, I could afford to rehome.
Oh, that's like, so
that's
sweet.
That's my dream.
That is so doting.
And I think that's not to say you can't enjoy expensive things.
Yeah, if, of course.
You know, that's my personal choice of where I'd like to spend my money. Because a designer handbag doesn't spark joy in me.
Yes.
Something else might. It doesn't
and you
mean
know, that's
wrong, you know.
But that's why I got tired. That social media fatigue kind of kicked in, because I think the last few years on social media have been very much, maybe it's advertising based because, you know, we're being projected images of things that we're being told we should aspire to
constantly
buy and to consume. But I did feel everything was about image rather than, and especially the industry I'm in, ironically enough, a lot of the people I'm around are creative people. So they're not really even interested in the most expensive handbag, the biggest car, the biggest house. They just want that, you know, good quality of life and to enjoy doing what they're doing.
Definitely.
And I think now that I'm meeting more people, it's only lately, really in the last couple of years, that I'm meeting people who are giving up maybe corporate jobs or, you know, the quote unquote job for life to do something that's a passion for them. And before, it would have been perceived that you'd need loads of money to do that. But you don't anymore. Like that, if you can set yourself up in a place where, or if you're fortunate enough to be able to do something you love and get paid for it, well, I mean, that's just winning.
Actually, that ties back perfectly into, because I realise I never finished the story. When my mom passed away, we had a mortgage to pay and my brother was 15 and we had help from family and everything. But, you know, it was kind of a moment of, okay, you kind of need to, well, I felt like I had to grow up.
Yes.
So I did take a
job. How old were you?
I was 23.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Looking back now, I was quite immature, 23, I think.
But you don't think that at the time?
No, no. And I did, I was offered a job in pharmaceuticals and I took it.
Okay.
And I was so happy there. I had a great time. I loved who I worked with. I'm still friends with them. You know, I had amazing, amazing, inspiring managers.
Okay.
Again, another podcast, the whole glass ceiling and stuff. There was a lot of women, female managers, which, you know, I'm all about equality, not about the gender quotas kind of bother me in the sense that if there's
a
barrier to a job, fair enough, but don't put women or men in a role because you're trying to balance the gender. Put them in the role if they want the role or they're good at the role.
I agree with that. Yeah.
But it was very inspiring because I had some really amazing managers who inspired me as people, let's say, which was great.
Okay.
But it was a permanent pensionable job. I had
a job for life.
Job for life. The golden handcuffs. I had 6 months paid maternity leave. I had a defined benefit pension. I had all these things, but I wasn't happy.
Okay.
And I only met one of my managers recently. She came to one of my retreats and I never forget her sitting in her office. I was there maybe a year and she said, Jean, we love what you're doing. We've earmarked you for management. We'd love you to go on this. And I literally started breaking out in a cold sweat. And like that's a lot of people's dream to know they're going to be fast tracked up through the ranks. And I was like, oh my God, how do I get, like, how do I say no to this?
You were literally, your body was literally becoming allergic in
my
the
intuition
situation.
Was like, no.
Run.
Yeah. And I do remember getting a letter about my pension, and I think I had another 43 years of service
is that
before
all?
I could retire. And I was like, get me out of here. But I did leave. It was a really tough decision. My dad was horrified.
Of course.
He was just retiring and I was giving up this amazing job.
And that's all they knew back then was, you know, they come from a time where you were just so lucky to get a job like that.
And I was on good money and I knew it was going to be tough and it was very hard. Funnily enough, I'm earning way less money than I was, but I somehow seem to have money
more.
Because I was spending a lot of money on things to make me happy.
Yes.
Because I wasn't happy.
So, Jean, it's been so, I feel like we could stay here for another hour. Thank you for being such a really interesting guest. I hope people can take something from this. And as always, you can reach out to our guests across social media. Jean, your studio is in?
The Model Firm Road, just
and
across
it's called
from the Motor Tax Office, Anam Sulis Yoga.
Gorgeous. Yeah. And that is also the name of your lovely Instagram page, which I love your updates. And if anyone wants to have a look at the retreats you have coming up, everything's on your Anam Sulis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Or send me a message and I'll get back to you.
I know.
Eventually.
And you know what? People love to. I have had so many messages this week, myself and Viv, about the last few episodes. And
so nice.
It's not something I kind of vouched for when I started doing the podcast day one. My attitude was, if we just have one person that listens and they go away and take something from it. Well, like somebody in the last few years when I've been struggling with my own challenges has been that person for me. Like going to your retreat, I came out much more focused and positive and wanting to go home and have a newly kind of reborn interest in food and, you know, doing a bit of yoga for myself. So I feel with the podcasts, if even just one person takes something away, but people do reach out.
Yeah.
So it's lovely that you are open for people to get in touch
with
you.
And someone shared a phrase at me recently, when one teaches, two learn.
Oh,
and
that's
I love
amazing.
That because I find I literally every single day learn from my
that's
students,
brilliant.
Which is so beautiful.
That's
as
lovely.
Cheesy as it sounds, it's so true. They teach me so much more often than I teach. I feel I teach. So do share.
That's amazing. So you've gone from scientist to traveling to charity work to dance to to kind of finding your own path. And I'm looking at you here. You are literally glowing.
Oh,
and she's no makeup on.
Glow.
There I was at home going, right, concealer, foundation. Like, and you're literally glowing.
Oh,
you look so, and you have a twinkle. It's just so
You'll
lovely.
You always know a yoga person from their eyes.
You are literally
the life
sparkling.
Force. You literally spend most of your yoga practice trying to increase the life force energy within you. And you can tell from their eyes. Yeah.
Right.
And I know by looking at my eyes when I'm not in a good place.
No way.
It's
that's
that
lovely.
Sparkle. And again, it's all that stuff you can't touch or explain. It's kind of just a feeling.
Just the way you are.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
amazing.
To wrap everything up, Jean, what do you think from your amazing mum's teachings and guidance and holding your hand? How do you think she's still holding your hand? What have you taken from your mum?
Oh, God.
Very deep.
It is, but it's lovely because I love the fact that she lives on through us.
Mm.
Like I obviously can't speak for them, but I feel like my sister and brother are so happy. And, you know, my sister's a beautiful little boy and another on the way, which is very exciting.
Yes, very exciting.
God. I think to be yourself and actually, be yourself, definitely be you.
Realized
that's what I'm calling this.
It's just come full circle.
To be you. But, you know, she always supported us in what we did. And what you said about that person who said their son went to do
the apprenticeship. Yeah.
I know I could have turned around to my mom and said I was going to do anything. And she may not have been 100% happy about it, but she would have supported us.
Okay.
So that's been huge because she knew the value of being authentic, I think, to yourself. But another thing that struck me recently, I was recounting the story. There was a time at the end of college where I was doing my final year project. I had agreed to choreograph a show. I was a doer.
Saying yes to everything.
I was in this chemistry society, the dance club. I was just doing everything and there was just no time and I just had a meltdown and I'll never forget it. I was in my room, I just come out of the showers in my towel and my headdress and I just remember my mom saying to me, you don't have to do everything.
Aww.
And that's been huge. Whenever I feel completely overwhelmed now, I'm like, I don't have to do all of these things, and it gave me permission. I turned around that moment and messaged people of things that I felt weren't priority at that time. So I messaged people and said, I'm really sorry I agreed to do this, it's no longer feasible.
Okay.
And you have permission,
in knowing what's important for you. And
yeah, is huge. And if you agreed to something and things change,
it's okay.
Do it nicely to say, I'm really sorry this no longer is working, you know?
Because we do, we literally kill ourselves trying to be, you know, that phrase like, I'm a jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
You're really not, you're not giving your full self if you're trying to be everything.
And by and large, that person maybe hopefully will understand, but it also gives someone an opportunity who has the time and energy to do it better maybe, or to do more of what they're supposed to do. Hmm. So yeah, I think to be you, and you don't have to do everything.
Oh, Jean Noonan, it has been the loveliest pleasure to chat to you. Yeah. And I hope that our listeners have enjoyed it as much as we have. Thank you so much.
Problem.
And best of luck.
Get in touch, because I love connecting with people. Definitely. Oh,
yes, that's what we're all about at The Life Hustle. Yes. So you can follow Jean on social media, Anam Sulis Yoga, and we'll tag her on all of our posts when the podcast goes live. Also, check out redextra.ie, where all of the fabulous podcasts are housed. If you enjoyed ours, please don't log off yet. There are plenty of other fantastic podcasts up there. Our podcast cousins in cahoots, if you're looking for something funny. There's lots of different ones, and there's fantastic video content as well. All the extra bits and bobs from Red FM are over there. So that's redextra.ie.